the conditions we said that were necessary for one to enjoin the good and forbid the evil, and we'll conclude our discussions. The first condition which is necessary for an individual to properly perform this Islamic responsibility is for them to actually have knowledge as to what is the ma'aruf and what is the munkar. Meaning if one wishes to enjoin the good and to forbid the evil, he must first understand what that is by Islamic teachings and by Islamic law. That means a person that doesn't have clear understandings as to what Islam allows and what Islam prohibits, it is not permissible for them to engage in enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. For the person, out of their ignorance, may be enjoining the evil and forbidding the good, and may be asking someone to do something that is really not permissible in Islam, or maybe asking them not to do something which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has permitted. So it is important for anyone who wishes to perform this Islamic duty for them to first gain knowledge and understanding as to Islamic teachings, and then go forth to enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. So that's the first requirement that is necessary. The second is for the individual performing this enjoining of the good and forbidding of the evil, for them to give a level of possibility that for them to actually perform this action will have an effect on the other person, the other individual. That means if you have 100% certainty that if you were to enjoin the good and forbid the evil, the other person would be unaffected, and it would make no difference whether you would do it and perform it and not, and one is not it's not obligatory on them, and they are not obligated towards performing this action. Now as to this possibility, even if this will stop that individual from performing that action, even 1%, or if they give the possibility that by them enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, this individual will at least not perform the action, or it will push back the performance of that action, and the individual still becomes obligated towards performing it. That means for you to make this reminder, you know the person will stop now. Whether they'll continue in the future, Allah knows. But at least for you to stop them at this instance, that itself makes this action obligatory. So that's the second, for an individual to at least give a percentage or a chance of this having an effect on them. The third is for an individual to make sure that this person committing this sin has done it multiple times and it has been repeated. And why do they say this? Because as human beings, as we stated, we all make mistakes. But it's important in this responsibility of enjoining the good and forbidding the evil for us not to be individuals who like to jump on and quickly attack others the first time in the instance that they are at fault. So you know, you need to establish the fact that this person has repeated this sin and has a level of persistence on performing this sin. Because if you don't know that, then it might be possible that this person has only committed this fault once, and then for him, he can, out of his own understanding, understand his fault and correct himself. Therefore, it isn't necessary for you to then again enjoin the good and forbid the evil. For that might embarrass the person, and as we stated last night, that embarrassing a mu'min itself is a sin. So it's important for us to first establish that the person and the individual has committed the sin more than once. The next is that we need to, again, be certain that this individual isn't exempt from a specific Islamic law and responsibility. For example, in the month of Ramadan, we know that all Muslims must fast so long as the sun is up. But there are certain cases where people are exempt from fasting. Now, if you were to see a person in the month of Ramadan, Muslim, that is not fasting and eating and drinking, before you proceed into enjoining the good and forbidding the evil and telling them off for why they are eating during Ramadan, you need to make sure that this person doesn't have a reason for him not to fast. For example, that he's not traveling. Again, it is disrespectful for you to approach a traveler and a guest of a city and for you to then tell him off that he is doing something wrong and he is committing a sin and that he should be fasting, for example. This is again a sin in itself, and it's embarrassing to the dignity of a mu'min, which is again haram. So in any case, one must again first establish that the person is not exempt from this sin or this ruling that one wants to enjoin the good and forbid the evil. In the final instance is for the person who is again enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, out of this action, no harm comes to them or no harm comes to another Muslim or to their wealth or to their possessions. In the case that if you know when you were to enjoin the good and forbid the evil, this will result in harm to yourselves, a physical harm or financial harm or physical or financial harm to another Muslim, then again at this point it is not wajib. Although this has, again, exceptions and certain barriers, and it has a limit, in the sense that if this fitna, if this sin is so grand that it requires an individual to stand up at a higher stage that we have stated in previous nights, then this last condition ceases to exist. Just like in the case of the Qiyam and the rise of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, for him to enjoin the good and forbid the evil, he had to sacrifice his life, the life of his companions, and the life of his women and children and their good health. So again, this only becomes permissible when this sin and this fitna grows to a grand stage that requires society to stand up against it. Now, one or two points just to make in regards to enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. The first is that, remember, each individual needs to have certain qualities and needs to make sure that they go about doing this properly, so that no individual is again disrespected, no individual is embarrassed as a result of that. And again, another point to keep in mind, which sometimes we tend to forget or misunderstand, is that it isn't necessary for the person who is enjoining the good and forbidding the evil to necessarily be performing that act themselves, or to be immune from that sin themselves. For example, you know of a person who is performing a sin, for example, lying. Now, as a Muslim, you're responsible towards enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. But this condition does not exist for you to be immune from lying, for you to tell him not to lie. That means if you tell yourself, well, I lie just as much as he does, therefore I shouldn't be responsible towards telling him because it is hypocritical, Islam says no. You're still responsible towards enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. Now, for this to have its utmost effect, and for this to actually have a level of change in the person, which again we said is our ultimate goal, then we need to make sure that we're also practicing what we preach. And this is a big and important concept in Islam, that it's important for you to first act upon something and then tell the other person. For if an individual preaches without practicing, Islam tells us, and the hadith of the Holy Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt tell us, that it will not have an effect. There's a famous riwayah from Imam Ali alayhi salam, salawat ala Muhammad. There's a famous saying from Imam Ali alayhi salam, which he states that if an individual who is speaking says something that he does not believe in, or he does not act upon, then that saying will come and enter one ear of the listener and exit out of the other. For because there is no sincerity and truth behind what he is saying. If he tells you to perform prayers on time, and he is an individual who performs his prayers right before they're about to become invalid and the time is done, then know that in most cases, for them to say something and try to enjoin this good, it won't have its utmost effect. But the Imam says that if an individual then says something or preaches or enjoins the good, and he also practices that, and there's sincerity in his words, then that saying and that word and that action will have an effect on the heart of the individual who is listening. So it's important that we also keep this in mind, that although it is not necessary for us to be specifically practicing for us to enjoin the good or forbid the evil, but if we want this to be effective, which is the goal of this responsibility in general, just as is any other responsibility and duty in Islam, it's important for us to first practice, and then after we've successfully done so, preach, so that we do not also become of the hypocrites. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. Today is a day of mourning, is a day of grievance for the events that took place and the disrespect that was done to the family of the Holy Prophet. So we'll begin with the maqtal. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك. عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار. ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا. We begin with the permission of the Holy Imam. The Holy Imam of our time, may Allah inshallah hasten his reappearance. Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. The day of Ashura began with the Holy Imam gathering his companions and for the final time telling them that this is the day that we will be martyred. This is the day that the enemies of Islam will engage in battle with us. O my companions, O my family, be strong and have faith in Allah and be patient. For Allah is with those who are patient. The companions of the Imam engaged in battle with the enemies of Islam. They continued in battle, and a number of the Imam's companions became martyred. Until it became time of prayer, the Imam asked one of his companions to tell the enemies of Islam it is time for prayer and for us to stop fighting. When this companion asked for permission, the enemies of Islam denied them permission and told them that their prayers were not accepted. So the Imam began praying in a state that some of the companions would stand in front of the Imam so the arrows of the enemies would not hit the Imam as he was praying. After Imam finished the prayer, again he spoke to his companions and reassured them of their responsibilities and that they must fight with the enemies of Islam. One by one, the companions and the family of the Holy Imam entered battle. Ali al-Akbar requested permission from the Holy Imam and entered the battle. Each of the companions of the Imam would enter battle and kill a number of the enemies. But this level of thirst, as they fought and they became tired, weakened them, till the enemies of Islam would strike them and hit them to the ground, till they would yell for the Imam, Ya Hussein, Adrikni, Ya Hussein, Adrikni. This continued for all of the companions of the Holy Imam. One by one they became martyred and shaheed, until only the Imam and Abbas was left. And then Abbas requested permission from the Holy Imam. Abbas then entered the battlefield as well, in search of water to quench the thirst of the women and the children. As Abbas entered the battlefield, enemies of Islam also attacked him. They severed his right arm and cut off his left hand, and shot the container of water with an arrow till the water fell to the floor. Abbas, like all the other companions, called for his brother, Ya Akha, Adrik Akha, farewell, O Hussein, from your brother Abbas. The Holy Imam spent time with Abbas next to his body and bid farewell. The Imam then came back to the camp and the tents of his army and his companions. But when he returned, one by one, the Imam went to the tents of his family and saw no one was left. He went to the tents of the sons of Aqil and saw no one was there to help him. He went to the tents of his followers and saw no one was left alive to support him. It was then that the Holy Imam yelled, Hal min dhabbin yadhubbu an harami rasulillah, Hal min mughithin yarju Allah bi'adatina. Is there no one left to protect the family and the beloveds of the Holy Prophet? Is there no one here that hears our cries, that is there to help us and support us? When Imam Sajjad heard the cry of his father, he was extremely sick and weak in his tent. But the saying of this holy father created the revolution in his heart. The Holy Imam exited the tent in the state that he could not even walk straight with his own power. He could not even carry his own sword and his shield, for he was so sick and weak. But the Imam persisted and continued to enter in the battlefield. As Hussein saw his son coming towards the battlefield, he told Zainab to stop Imam al-Sajjad. The Holy Imam continued until he came to the side of his father. Hussein hugged him and brought him back to the tent. He said, Oh my son, what is this that you are doing? You are sick and weak. You do not even have a sword in hand and a shield in hand. What is it that you're doing in the battlefield, Oh my son, Oh Ali? Imam Sajjad then told his father, When I heard your cry, Ya Abba, saying, Al Mizab bin Yazub al Haram Rasulillah, I felt my heart break, Oh father. I could not sit here and listen to your cries and not do anything. So I came to the battlefield to give my life for you, O grandson of the Holy Prophet. The Holy Imam nurtured Imam al-Sajjad and told him to be patient, for Allah is with those who are patient. He said, Oh my son, after me, you are the Imam of my followers. And for them to follow you, It was then that he told Zainab and Urm Kulthum and Sakina to all look at Imam al-Sajjad. وَهُوَ إِمَامٌ مُفْتَرَضُ الطَّاعَةِ. He then appointed Imam al-Sajjad as the living Imam to the Shia. It was then that the holy Imam turned to Sajjad and told him, send my salams to my followers and companions after me. Ya waladi, balligh shi'ati al-'an salam. Faqul lahum inna abi mata ghariba. Inna abi mata ghariba. ومضى شهيدا فابكوا. He said that, oh my son, send my salams to my followers and say that surely my father was killed and he was alone. No one was there to help and support him and cry for the musiba, for the tragedy of my father. Imam then turns to the women and the children and looks to bid farewell from them one by one. Ya Sukaina, ya Fatima, ya Zainab, wa ya Umm Kulthum, alaykunna min salam, fahada akhir al-ijtima'. This is the last time I will see you, O Zakayna, O Fatima, O Zainab, and O Umm Kulthum. This is my final farewell to you. This is the last time I will see you. And near is the time of your pain and hardships. Near is the time that you will be in prison and taken as slaves. The Imam began to cry and weep. Zainab then said, oh brother, I cannot tolerate to see you weeping. Why are you crying, O Hussein? The Imam replied, كيف لا أبكي وعما قليل تساقون بين العداء. Ya Zainab, how should I not cry? For soon they will take you prisoner and pass you by the enemies of Islam. Ya Zainab, I am not crying for my own tragedy. Rather, I am crying for your imprisonment and for your hardships. Al-Wada'a, Al-Wada'a, Al-Firaqa, Al-Firaq, Al-Wada'a, Al-Wada'a, Al-Firaqa, Al-Firaq. It was then that Sakina came to Imam al-Hussein. She said, Ya Abata, Aist Aslamta lil-Maut fa'ila man attakil. Oh my father, oh Hussein, have you given in to death? For after you die, who will look after me? Who will be there to support me and keep me safe? The Imam hugs Sakina and calms her and ask her to be patient, for Allah is truly with those who are patient. Sakina then asked, oh my father, take us back to Medina, take us away from this land. The Imam then said, لَوْ تُرِكَ الْغَطَى لَغَفَى وَنَامْ. Oh Sakina, if they allowed me to return to Medina, none of this would have happened. But the enemies of Islam will not allow me to return. Be patient and have faith in Allah. The Imam cries with Sakina and hugs her and caresses her and bids her his final farewell. The Imam then turns to Zainab. The Imam then turns to Zainab for his final farewell. How will he bid farewell to Zainab? Zainab was with the Holy Imam their whole life. Zainab cannot stand to be Not next to the side of her brother Zainab cannot stand to be away from Hussein. How will he bid farewell to Zainab? Imam, tell Zainab, be strong, be patient. After me, it is you that has to look after these women and children. Zainab then says to the holy Imam, Mahlan, ya akhi. Oh Hussein, be easy and wait, do not leave so soon. توقف حتى تزود من ووودعك وداع مفارق لا تلاقي بعد. She says, oh my brother, oh Hussein, do not leave me so soon. Wait for a few minutes. For me to see you one more time. For after you leave, I will not be able to see you again, ya Hussein. Zainab stood there and looked at the face and body of Hussein and continued to cry. She fell to the hands and feet of the holy Imam and continued to cry. The holy Imam was trying to leave, but Zainab would not allow her. She was too saddened to see her brother leave. So the Imam put her hand on the chest of Zainab and calmed her and told her to be patient and to be strong. It was then that Zainab was able to become calm. The Imam then bid farewell to Zainab. He bid farewell to Zainab and he turned to go and engage in battle. It was then that he heard Zainab exit the tent and run towards him. He said, oh my brother, wait for a moment so I may perform my mother's will. Hussein said, what is the will of my mother? What is the will of Zahra, ya Zainab? Zainab said, my mother Zahra told me that when the time comes that your brother Hussein is leaving to engage in battle with the enemies, on my behalf, ya Zainab, kiss the throne of Hussein. Kiss the same place that the Holy Prophet would kiss. Zainab then kissed the throne of the Holy Imam. And they bid farewell. The Imam then turned and continued into battle. As the Imam continued into battle, he heard a weak sound coming from behind him. He turned and saw it was Sakina. He said, ya Sakina, what is it? He said, oh Hussein, I have one final request from you. My final request is that you come down from the horse and you hug and caress me like you would hug and caress an orphan child, ya Hussein. For after you leave, who will look after me? The Imam came on the floor, sat next to Sakina, and began to hug and caress her. Oh, Sakina, be patient. Zainab will look after you. Yeah, Sakina, be patient. The Imam then turned and entered the battlefield. As he entered the battlefield, before he was to enter, he asked his sister Zainab, ya Zainab, give me a few pieces of cloth for me to cover and put under my armor and my clothes. They asked, why do you need a piece of cloth, ya Hussein? He said, I know these enemies of Islam, after they martyr me, they will take my clothes and my armor, and for my body not to be there bare and naked. So the Imam put the cloths under his armor and his gear. The Imam then entered the battlefield and he spoke with the enemies of Islam. He said, by Allah, do you not know who I am? The enemies responded, yes, we know, you are the grandson of the Holy Prophet. The Imam said, by Allah, do you not know that Ali is my father? They said, yes, we know, Ali is your father. He said, by Allah, do you not know my grandmother is Khadija, the first woman to become Muslim? They said, yes, we know that Khadija is your grandmother. The Imam said, by Allah, do you not know Ja'far, who is in the heavens now, is my uncle? They said, yes, Hussein, we know that Ja'far is your uncle. He said, by Allah, do you not know the soul?